पञ्चकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रीतरं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Right now we're up to chapter 16 of the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled The Description of Jamadeep. Now, way back in the first chapter of this canto, it described Maharaj Priyavrata, the eldest son of King Uttanapad. So he was ruling the universe and he accomplished some very wonderful things. So I'd like to read some of the things that he accomplished, and that will give us the key required to enter into the question that Maharaj Prickett asked Sukadev Goswami, that leads to this chapter. Sukadev Goswami is speaking this chapter and other chapters. So in the first canto, in the first chapter of the fifth canto, the 30th verse describes that King Priyavrata once became dissatisfied with the circumambulation of the most powerful sun god. Encircling Sumeru Hill on his chariot, the sun god illuminates all the surrounding planetary systems. However, when the sun is on the northern side of the hill, the south receives less light, so the hill of Sumeru blocks the sunlight to the southern side. And when the sun is on the southern side, the north receives less light. So King Priyavrata disliked this situation and therefore decided to make daylight in the part of the universe where there was night. He followed the orbit of the sun on a brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. So while the sun was on the northern side and darkness was on the southern side, Priyavrata was on the southern side in an effulgent golden chariot bringing light there. So basically 24 hours a day it was bright. He didn't like the sun, the nighttime. He followed the orbit of the sun god on a brilliant chariot and thus fulfilled his desire. He could perform such wonderful activities because of the power he had achieved by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, the rims of his chariot wheels created impressions that later became seven oceans, dividing the planetary system known as Bhumandal into seven islands. So Bhumandal is a middle planetary system. So it was divided into oceans and islands by the chariot wheels of Priyavrata. The names of the islands that Bhumandal was divided into are Jambu, means Jambu Dweep. Dweepa means island. Jambu Dweep, Plaksha Dweep, Somali Dweep, Kusha Dweep, Kramsha Dweep, Shaka Dweep, and Pushkara. That's seven divisions. Each island is twice as large as the one preceding it, and each is surrounded by a liquid substance beyond which is the next island. The seven oceans respectively contain salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, clarified butter, milk, emulsified yogurt, and sweet drinking water. All the islands are completely surrounded by these oceans, and each ocean is equal in breadth to the island it surrounds. Maharaj Priyavrata, the husband of Queen Brahishmati, gave sovereignty over these islands to his respective sons, namely Agnidra, Idmajiva, Jagyabahu, Haranyareta, Grita Prishta, Medha Titi, and Vittihotra. Thus they all became kings by the order of their father. So that was in the first chapter. Now here, and after that was discussed in the fifth canto, then Priyavrata's son Agnidra was described and how he gave birth to Rishabdev, and Rishabdev's son was Bharat Maharaj, and Bharat Maharaj incarnated as Jadbharat. And we've just completed hearing the instructions that Jadbharat gave to Maharaj Rahugana. Now here, in the 16th chapter, Cricket Maharaj, who had been listening very carefully, he asked about a question about something that he's previously heard way back in the first chapter. So he asks in text 1, King Prickett said to Sukadeva Goswami, O Brahmana, you have already informed me that the radius of Bhumandal extends as far as the sun spreads its light and heat, and as far as the moon and all the other stars can be seen. So he's described something about Bhumandal. Second verse. So he said about Bhumandal, my dear Lord, the rolling wheels of Maharaj Priyavrata's chariot created seven ditches in which the seven oceans came into existence. Because of these seven oceans, Bhumandal is divided into seven islands. You have given a very general description of their measurement, name, and characteristics. We just heard that, very general. Now I wish to know of them in detail. Kindly fulfill my desire. When the mind, text 3, is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his external feature made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form, it is brought to the platform of pure goodness. In that transcendental position, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the modes of nature. Oh my Lord, please describe vividly how that form which covers the entire universe is perceived. So one should study matter or view matter, seeing it as Krishna's energy. And Prabhupada will explain that in his purport. And that purifies one's consciousness, because the tendency in material life, well, not the tendency, but what does it mean to be in material life, is to view the material energy as if it was Prakriti and we are Purusha. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Janiha Karanam Guna Sangasya. And this attitude, Sarasat Joni Janmasu, it forces us into song, birth after birth, womb after womb in the material world. But different than that is if we see the material world as Krishna's. If we actually succeed in doing that, if our consciousness is so spiritual that we can see the material world as Krishna's, then Vishrapona Sukhayate, the material world, ceases to be a place of misery and it becomes a place of happiness. Why? Because what makes us see the material world as a place for us to exploit for our own pleasure? That is Maya. Maya forces us to see in that way. It perverts our consciousness. And we live as if we are false ego. Because when consciousness reflects into the material world with that mood, then it becomes false ego. So Maharaj Prickett is saying here that he's previously received the instruction way back in the second canto that to see the universal form of the Lord, that means to see everything in relationship to the Lord. And that, by doing that, one is brought to the platform of Vasudeva, or the Shuddha consciousness, pure consciousness. And then from there, one can see not only matter, one can see how this world is pervaded by Krishna in his Vasudeva, all-pervading feature. And then still more wonderful than that is to see how Krishna is the cause of all causes, Krishna the Supreme Lord, and he is situated far, far away from the material world in Goloka Vrindavan. So matter even is ultimately spiritual when the maya is removed. Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, that when the jyoti, the Brahman, is covered by maya, then it is seen by as matter. So when Brahman, the spiritual energy, is covered by maya, especially our consciousness is covered by that maya, then the material or the world, what we see covered by maya, is called material. But if the maya leaves, then there is no material world, practically speaking. So Prabhupada explains in his purport. Maharaj Prickett had already been advised by his spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami to think of the universal form of the Lord. That was in the very first chapter of the second canto. And therefore, following the advice of his spiritual master, he continuously thought of that form. The universal form is certainly material, but because everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately, nothing is material. Nothing is separated from him. Therefore, Prickett Maharaj's mind, from seeing this way, was saturated with spiritual consciousness. He was actually perceiving everything as Krishna's. Srila Rupa Goswami had said, so if we see everything with its connection with Krishna, then the mind becomes purified completely, crystal clear and purified. So Rupa Goswami has said, prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mamukshubhi prityago vairagyam falgu katyate. Everything, even that which is material, is connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur translates this verse as follows. Hari sevaya yaha haya anukul vishaya balaya tahara tyage haya vul. One should not give up anything connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking it material or enjoyable for the material senses. Even the senses, when purified, are spiritual. That means, as soon as we remove the tendency from our senses, from our minds, to enjoy, then everything becomes spiritual. This is the root problem, and it has to be approached. When Maharaj Prickett was thinking of the universal form of the Lord, his mind was certainly situated on the transcendental platform. Therefore, although he might not have had any reason to be concerned with detailed information of the universe, he was thinking of it in relationship with the Supreme Lord, and therefore such geographical knowledge was not material, but transcendental. So he was interested in hearing, he's asking about the universal situation, and the fifth canto will describe that, but it is not just material. And in this purport, and another one, at least one other, we'll hear what we are supposed to gain from hearing these chapters describing the universe. What are we actually supposed to gain from this? I've heard Prabhupada say that our business is not to understand the creation. The devotee is not actually interested in understanding the creation in the sense of how the creation fits together and how it works. We have to do that sometimes, maybe, because certainly people will ask us. But that's not actually the interest of the devotee or his desire. His desire, Prabhupada explained, was to love Krishna. So he didn't have any reason to be concerned with detailed information of the universe. He was thinking of it, the universe, in relation of the Supreme Lord, and therefore such geographical knowledge was not material but transcendental. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, because seeing everything in connection with Krishna, Krishna becomes dominant in it. Just like if we see the shoe of someone we love or respect, we're not just seeing shoe or energy, we're seeing that person in it. And that shoe takes on a completely different quality if we have love for the person who owns that shoe, who uses that shoe. So similarly, when we see the material world as Krishna's, the material world, when knowledge about the material world is spiritual. But yet, that cannot be bluffed or imitated if we don't truly have that vision. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.20, Narada Muni has said, Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetara. The entire universe is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it appears different from Him. Therefore, although Prickett Maharaj had no need for geographical knowledge of this universe, that knowledge was also spiritual and transcendental, because he was thinking of the entire universe as an expansion of the energy of the Lord. This is the answer to all problems, to see everything in relationship with Krishna, and everything becomes spiritual, and our consciousness will become pure and crystal clear if we never forget Krishna. But this is not easy to do. Why though? It's because of false ego. And what is false ego? False ego is the soul in illusion having the tendency to exploit the material energy, use it for his own pleasure. In our preaching work also, we deal with so much property and money and so many books bought and sold. But because these dealings all pertain to the Krishna consciousness movement, they should never be considered material. That is, that one is absorbed in thoughts of such management does not mean that he is outside of Krishna consciousness. But being absorbed in management doesn't mean that you're in Krishna consciousness either. The point is that one should do whatever one is doing and thinking of Krishna, seeing everything's connection with Krishna. If one rigidly observes the regulative principles of chanting 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, his dealings with the material world for the sake of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement are not different from the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So the consciousness must be protected, and it should be in a serving mood to Krishna. And then one will see the material world as Krishna's as well. And in the next verse, we'll read the next verse in the purport. Prabhupada will explain the conclusion that we should reach after hearing about this creation, because there's many, many chapters that describe the creation, and it's not possible to understand it fully. And especially me, I can't understand it very well. But how to deal with this? How to deal with what we hear? And what are we supposed to gain from it? That Prabhupada will explain here and in other places. So the great Rishi, Sukadeva Goswami, replied when he asked him to, he's asked him to explain... in detail about this Bhumandala here. So the great Rishi Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, there is no limit to the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. It is unlimited. It is unlimitedly great and is unlimitedly tiny as well. Intricate. This material world is a transformation of the material qualities, sattva-gun, rajagun, and tamagun. Yet no one could possibly explain it perfectly. The scientists will have huge atom smashers to see what's inside the atom, see what's inside the particles that are inside the atom, and then they'll try to smash those, and then they'll smash what they come up with, and smash and smash and smash, and they'll never get to the end of it. No one can possibly explain it perfectly, even in a lifetime as long as that of Brahma. No one in the material world is perfect, and an imperfect person could not describe this material universe accurately, even after continued speculation. O King, I shall nevertheless try to explain to you the principal regions, such as Bhugolak, and Bulok, that's Buloka, with their names, forms, measurements, and various symptoms. So he's going to give some idea of the universe. Prabhupada's purport. The material world is only 1/4 of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's creation. But it is unlimited and impossible for anyone to know or describe, even with the qualification of a life as long as that of Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years. Modern scientists and astronomers try to explain the cosmic situation and the vastness of space. And some of them believe that all the glittering stars are different suns. From Bhagavad Gita, however, we understand that all these stars, nakshatras, are like the moon in that they reflect the sunshine. They are not independent luminaries. Bhuloka is explained to be that portion of outer space through which the heat and light of the sun extend. Therefore, it is natural to conclude that this universe extends in space as far as we can see and encompasses the glittering stars. Srila Sukadeva Goswami admitted that to give full details of this expansive material universe would be impossible. But nevertheless, he wanted to give the king as much knowledge as he had received through the parampara system. We should conclude that if one cannot comprehend the material expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly cannot estimate the expansiveness of the spiritual world. The Brahma Samhita confirms this. Adaitam achutam anadir anadim anantarupam adyam purana purusham navajovanam cha. The limits of the expansion of Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be estimated by anyone, even a person as perfect as Brahma, not to speak of tiny scientists whose senses and instruments are all imperfect, who cannot give us information of even this one universe. We should therefore be satisfied with the information obtainable from Vedic sources as spoken by authorities like Sukadeva Goswami. So again, as Prabhupada had said, the interest of the devotee is to learn to love Krishna and not understand in detail the creation. Yet, this information is presented. So what we are being requested by Prabhupada to say, we should be satisfied with the information obtainable from Vedic sources as spoken by authorities like Sukadeva Goswami, and understand that if this material world is so complex and ununderstandable, then how much so is the spiritual world, what to speak of the source of both the material world and the spiritual world, Krishna. So these are the basic points that we should understand. Now here we will begin some description. The planetary system known as Bhumandal resembles a lotus flower, and its seven islands resemble the whorl of that flower. The length and breadth of the island known as Jambadweep, which is situated in the middle of the whorl, are 100 yojanas, 8 million miles. Jambadweep is round like the leaf of a lotus flower. In Jambadweep, there are 9 divisions of land, each with a length of 9,000 yojanas. So there's 8 miles in a yojana. So there's 72,000 miles in each of these 9 divisions. So in the next chapters, 16, 17, 18, 19, it's going to deal with Jambadweep. This one part of Bhumandal. And then from there we'll go to the structure of the universe, the orbits of the planets, the subterranean heavenly planets, then Anantadev, hellish planets, then the canto is finished. So for the next while, so chapter 19, the discussion will be of Jambadvipa, and then it will go to more about the universe. In Jambadvipa, there are 9 divisions of land, each with a length of 72,000 miles. There are 8 mountains that mark the boundaries of these divisions and separate them nicely. So the 9 divisions in Jambadvipa, there are mountains, 8 mountains that mark these. Amidst these divisions, or varshas, so the division means a varsha, is the varsha name Ilavritta, which is situated in the middle of the whirl of the lotus. Within Ilavritta varsha is Sumeru Mountain, which is made of gold. Sumeru Mountain is like the pericarp of the lotus-like Bhumandal planetary system. Pericarp, I think, is a sheath, a surrounding sheath. The mountain's height, this is Sumeru Mountain, is the same as the width of Jambadvipa. Or in other words, it is 100,000 yojanas. The mountain is 800,000 miles tall. Of that, 16,000 yojanas, 128,000 miles, are within the earth. And therefore the mountain's height above the earth is 84,000 yojanas, 672,000 miles. If you asked me to draw it, I wouldn't be able to. But it's something like this, and part of it is in the earth. And it extends up. All I know is it's very high. The mountain's width is 32,000 yojanas at its summit. That means it's 256,000 miles thick at the top and 16,000 yojanas at its base. So it's half the width at its base as it is on top. So it, instead of, because we usually think of mountains going like this, but this one goes like this. Just north of Ilavritta Varsha, and going further northward, one after another, are 3 mountains named Nila, Sveta, and Sringavan. These mark the border of the 3 Varshas named Ramyaka, Haranmaya, and Kuru that separate them from one another. The width of these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles. Lengthwise, they extend east and west to the beaches of the ocean of salt water. Going from north to south, the length of each mountain is 1/10 of that of the previous mountain, but the height of them is all the same. There's a little purport here, which is interesting. There's a quotation, Prabhupada quotes, that Madhvacharya has quoted from the Brahmananda Purana. And then the translation is, or this is what Prabhupada says about that. It appears from these verses that aside from the sun and the moon, there is an invisible planet called Rahu. The movements of Rahu cause both solar and lunar eclipses. We suggest that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu. But it's amazing that although the astronomers nowadays they can predict eclipses without using Rahu. They can predict eclipses, but also the Vedic astronomers using Rahu also predict eclipses exactly. Text 9. Similarly, south of Ilavritta Varsha and extending from east to west are 3 great mountains named from north to south, Nishada, Hemakuta, and Himalaya. Each of them is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. They mark the boundaries of the 3 Varshas, 3 divisions named Harivarsha, Kimpurusha Varsha, and Bharat Varsha, India. In the same way, west and east of Ilavritta Varsha are 2 great mountains named Malyavan and Gandhamandaram respectively. These 2 mountains, which are 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles high, extend as far as Nila Mountain in the north and Nishada in the south. They indicate the borders of Ilavritta Varsha and also the Varshas known as Ketumala and Vajrasva. So these Varshas and the inhabitants are going to be spoken of in the 18th chapter. This is the 16th chapter. So this is giving a basic description of what Jambadvipa is like, which is a part of Bhumandala, which is a part of the universe, which is a part of the material creation. Prabhupada says in his purport, there are so many mountains even on this planet Earth. We do not think that the measurements of all of them have actually been calculated. While passing over the mountainous region from Mexico to Caracas, we actually saw so many mountains that we doubt whether their height, length, and breadth have been properly measured. Therefore, as indicated by Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami, we should not try to comprehend the greater mountainous areas of the universe merely by our calculation. Sukadeva Goswami has already stated that such calculations would be very difficult even if one had a duration of life like that of Lord Brahma. We should simply be satisfied with the statements of authorities like Sukadeva Goswami and appreciate how the entire cosmic manifestation has been made possible by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is what Prabhupada is asking us to do. Basically, accept what Sukadeva Goswami has said and appreciate how wonderful Krishna is who has created this. The measurements given herein, such as 10,000 yojanas or 100,000 yojanas, should be considered correct because they have been given by Sukadeva Goswami. Our experimental knowledge can neither verify nor disprove the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. We should simply hear these statements from the authorities. So that is what Prabhupada is asking us to do, just hear them. If we can appreciate the extensive energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that will benefit us. So that is what we're being requested to do. Just hear it, appreciate how powerful the Lord is, and that will be good for us. Because as soon as we understand how powerful the Lord is, then immediately we understand how tiny and insignificant we are. And then we can approach Krishna with some sincerity and surrender to him. And then bhakti begins. Text 11. On the four sides of the great mountains known as Sumeru are four mountains. Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kamuda, which are like its belts. The length and height of these mountains are calculated to be 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. Standing like flagstaffs on the summits of these four mountains are a mango tree, a rose apple tree, a kadamba tree, and a banyan tree. These trees are calculated to have a width of 100 yojanas. The trees are 800 miles wide and a height of 1,100 yojanas. The trees are 8,800 miles high. Their branches also spread to a radius of 1,100 yojanas. O Maharaj Prickett, best of the Bharata dynasty, between these four mountains are four huge lakes. The water of the first lake tastes like milk. The water of the second like honey, and that of the third like sugarcane juice. The fourth lake is filled with pure water. The celestial beings, such as the Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who are also known as demigods, enjoy the facilities of those four lakes. Consequently, they have natural perfections of mystic yoga, such as the power to become smaller than the smallest or greater than the greatest. There are also four celestial gardens named Nandana, Chitrarata, Vaibhrajaka, and Sarvatobhadra. The best of the demigods, along with their wives, who are like ornaments of heavenly beauty, meet together and enjoy within those gardens, while their glories are sung by lesser demigods known as Gandharvas. On the lowest slopes of Mandar Mountain is a mango tree named Devachuta. It is 1,100 yojanas high. Mangoes as big as mountain peaks and as sweet as nectar fall from the tops of this tree for the enjoyment of the citizens of heaven. When all of these solid fruits fall from such height, they break, and the sweet, fragrant juice within them flows out and becomes increasingly more fragrant as it mixes with other scents. That juice cascades from the mountain in waterfalls and becomes a river called Arunod, which flows pleasantly through the eastern side of Ilavrita. The pious wives of the Yakshas act as personal maidservants to assist Pavani, the wife of Lord Shiva. Because they drink the water of the river Arunod, their bodies become fragrant, and as the air carries away that fragrance, it perfumes the entire atmosphere for 80 miles around. Similarly, the fruits of the jambu tree, which are full of pulp and have very small seeds, fall from a great height and break to pieces. Those fruits are the size of elephants, and the juice gliding from them becomes a river named Jambu Nadi. This river falls a distance of 10,000 yojanas from the summit of Meru Mandara to the southern side of Ilavrita and floods the entire land of Ilavrita with juice. Here's what Prabhupada has to say about that. We can only imagine how much juice there might be in a fruit that is the size of an elephant, but has only a very tiny seed. Naturally, the juice from the broken jambu fruit forms waterfalls and floods the entire land of Ilavrita. That juice produces an immense quantity of gold, as will be explained in the next verses. 2021. The mud on both banks of the river Jambu Nadi, being moistened by the flowing juice and then dried by the air and the sunshine, produces huge quantities of gold called Jambu Nad. The denizens of heaven use this gold for various kinds of ornaments. Therefore, all the inhabitants of the heavenly planets and their youthful wives are fully decorated with golden helmets, bangles, and belts, and thus they enjoy life. Prabhupada, in his purport to this verse, describes how in contemporary civilization everyone is very proud of their advancement and their knowledge, and they will scoff at these type of descriptions as mythology, but yet they are nevertheless unfortunate and not happy, full of anxiety, misguided, and how in previous times the women wore ornaments of gold, and now instead of wearing ornaments of gold there is just plastic, no gold, just plastic. So Prabhupada explains, sometimes these unfortunate people want to be promoted to the heavenly planets to achieve fortunate positions as described in this verse. But pure devotees of the Lord are not at all interested in such opulence. Even rivers of mango juice. The devotees don't care for opulences. Any opulence, gold, anything. Fame, prestige, wealth. Nadanam, nadanam, nasundarim, kavitam va, jagadish, kamani. Indeed, devotees sometimes compare the color of gold to that of bright golden stool. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed devotees not to be allured by golden ornaments and beautifully decorated women. Nadanam, nadanam, nasundari. A devotee should not be allured by gold, beautiful women, or the prestige of having many followers. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore confidentially prayed, Mama janmani janmanishare, my Lord, please bless me with your devotional service. I do not want anything else. A devotee may pray to be delivered from this material world. That is his only aspiration. He wants Krishna's service. That is actually a devotee. He longs for that. He tastes the sweetness of that, and he wants to taste it more. Ayi nanda tunuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavambudau kripaya tapapara pankaja stita duli sadvijam vachintaya. The humble devotees simply prays to the Lord, kindly pick me up from the material world, which is full of varieties of material opulence, and keep me under the shelter of your lotus feet. So the devotee, he doesn't want to enjoy the material world. That means a devotee doesn't have a false ego, because his desire is to serve Krishna. That is what it means to be a devotee. Srila Narottama Das Thakur prays, Haha Prabhu Nanda Sutta Brisha Manu Sutta Juta Karuna Karoha Ebaro Narottama Dasa Kai Nataliha Rangapai Toma Vine Kea Cheyamar. O my Lord, O son of Nanda Maharaj, now you are standing before me with your consort, the daughter of Brisha Banu, Srimati Radharani. Kindly accept me as the dust of your lotus feet. Please do not kick me away. Rangapai, do not kick me away. Not Taliha, Rangapai. Please do not kick me away from the reddish soles of your lotus feet. This is the mood of a devotee. And this mood, this humility, and this desire, mixed with his lack of desire to enjoy in the material world and a strong desire to serve Krishna, Srimati Radharani. This keeps him very, very, very close and very dear to Krishna. That thought, I have no other shelter outside of you. Similarly, Prabodhananda Saraswati indicates that the position of the demigods, who are decorated with golden helmets and other ornaments, is no better than a phantasmagoria. Tridasapura kashapushpayate. What is a phantasmagoria? Yeah, it appears to be fantastic and wonderful, but it actually has no existence. So this is how devotees see the things produced of the material world. Temporary, fleeting, no real existence. And on the other hand, they see the reddish lotus feet of Nanda Sutta and Brishabhanu Sutta, the daughter of Maharaj Brishabhanu Srimati Radharani and the son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna. They see that shelter as real, and they see the material world as phantasmagoria. That is their actual experience. So a devotee is never allured by such opulences. So this is Prabhupada's comment after explaining about all the gold in these heavenly parts of Jambudvip. He simply aspires to become the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. So don't be allured by the wonders of the universe. We tend to get allured by these temporary creations. But it is actually phantasmagoria. And at the time of our death, it won't be there to help us. We'll try to grasp it. But that's the nature of phantasmagoria. It's illusion. It's a dream. It's illusion. Try to grab a dream. Try to grab something that doesn't exist and take shelter of it. So this is what we're really, really called to do, the challenge of our life. Now we see the material world is real and the spiritual world is something ethereal. But the challenge of our life is to completely reverse that, to perceive the spiritual world as fully real, to be so realized. That's what it means to be realized, self-realized, realized in Krishna consciousness, to have the depth of perception, to perceive the reality of it. and to understand the true nature of the material world, to understand the nature of the material world, what do we have to do? To understand the true nature of the material world. What keeps us from seeing the true nature of the material world? Yeah, that illusion. Illusion keeps us from seeing what it is, but if we take a step back and if we are aware and not attached, we will see it is just flickering, continuously flickering. The same thing is coming again and again and again, and this one didn't bring me happiness, so why will it bring me happiness when it comes again? Again and again, and it never brought anyone any happiness or satisfaction or security or what they're truly longing for. But yet, due to that desire to enjoy, which means maya, we cannot see the actual nature of the material. We are too close to it. We're in it. We are merged with it, practically speaking. Really, we are merged in it because our consciousness is fixed in it, wanting to enjoy it. So we become one with the material world, so we can't see it as it is. So we should not become allured by the material world. Hear about the wondrous descriptions of the material world and just understand, oh, this is so amazing. How amazing is this personality, Krishna? This is just ekam sena stito jagat. Nothing for him. Text 22. On the side of Suparshva mountain stands a big tree called the Mahakadamba, which is very celebrated. From the hollows of this tree flow five rivers of honey, each about five vyamas wide. Now, do you know how much a vyama is? If you put out your hands like this, this is a vyama. So there's five rivers of honey, and each are about five vyamas. So how wide is that?
25 vyamas.
And how wide is this in other calculations other than a vyama, huh?
Six.
Prabhupada says it comes to about 8 feet. A little stretching to make it eight. This is 18 inches theoretically. This is a cubit. It's not quite two of those, but then you have this part over here. You add it together, it's about 6-7 feet. Maybe with some of the more lengthy fellows. Some people it's only going to be 3 or 4 feet, maybe. Little guys. So the rivers of honey come to about 200 feet of honey flowing from this Mahakadamba tree. The air carrying the scent from the mouths of those who drink that honey perfumes the land for 100 yojanas around. Similarly, on Kamuda Mountain, there was a great banyan tree which is called Satavalsa because it has 100 main branches. Satta, 100. From these branches come many roots from which many rivers are flowing. These rivers flow down from the top of the mountain to the northern side of Ilavritavarsha for the benefit of those who live there. Because of these flowing rivers, all the people have ample supplies of milk, yogurt, honey, clarified butter, ghee, molasses, food grains, clothes, bedding, sitting places, and ornaments. All the objects they desire are sufficiently supplied for their prosperity, and therefore they are very happy. Prabhupada in his purport explains that these natural type of opulences, as he has described, the milk, the honey, yogurt, clarified butter, food, nice clothing, clean bedding, these things actually increase the goodness of people and they bring happiness. But now our attempts for happiness are in passionate ignorance. Skyscrapers and cars, as Prabhupada says. And these things actually do not bring happiness to the soul, even if we possess them. And when we don't possess them, we are in anxiety. When we do possess them, more anxiety. The residents of the material world, the material world, who enjoy the products of these flowing rivers, have no wrinkles on their bodies and no gray hair. They never feel fatigue, and perspiration does not give their bodies a bad odor. They are not afflicted by old age, disease, or untimely death. They do not suffer from chilly cold or scorching heat, nor do their bodies lose their luster. They all live very happily without anxiety until death. These are the residents of the material world near these places. Prabhupada's purport. This verse hints at the perfection of human society even within this material world. The miserable condition of this material world can be corrected by a sufficient supply of milk, yogurt, honey, ghee, molasses, food grains, ornaments, bedding, sitting places, and so on. This is human civilization. Ample food grains can be produced through agricultural enterprises, and profuse supplies of milk, yogurt, and ghee can be arranged through cow protection. Abundant honey can be attained if the forests are protected. Unfortunately, in modern civilization, men are busy killing the cows that are the source of yogurt, milk, and ghee, and they are cutting down all the trees that supply honey, and they are opening up factories to manufacture nuts, bolts, automobiles, and wine, instead of engaging in agriculture. How can people be happy? They must suffer from the misery of materialism. Their bodies become wrinkled and gradually deteriorate until they become almost like dwarves, and a bad odor emanates from their bodies because of unclean perspiration resulting from eating all kinds of nasty things. This is not human civilization. If people actually want happiness in this life and want to prepare for the best in the next life, they must adopt the Vedic civilization. In a Vedic civilization, there is a full supply of all the necessities mentioned above. 26. There are other mountains beautifully arranged around the foot of Mount Meru, like the filaments around the whorl of a lotus flower. The names of Karanga, Kurara, Kusumba, Vaikunka, Trikuta, Shirsha, Patanga, Ruchaka, Nishada, Sinivasa, Kapila, Sanka, Vaidurja, Varudi, Hamsa, Rishabh, Naga, Kalanjara, and Narad. On the eastern side of Sumeru Mountain are two mountains named Jatara and Devakuta, which extend to the north and south for 18,000 yojanas. Similarly, on the western side of Sumeru are two mountains named Pavana and Pariyatra, which also extend north and south for the same distance. On the southern side of Sumeru are two mountains named Kailash and Karavir, which extend east and west for 18,000 yojanas. And on the northern side of Sumeru, extending for the same distance east and west, are two mountains named Trishringa and Makar. The width and height of all these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles. Sumeru, a mountain of gold, of solid gold, shining as brilliant as fire, is surrounded by these eight mountains. In the middle of the summit of Meru is the township of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is calculated to extend for 10,000 million yojanas, 80 million miles. It is made entirely of gold, and therefore learned scholars and sages called it Shatakumbhi. Surrounding Brahmapuri in all directions are the residences of the eight principal governors of the planetary systems, beginning with King Indra. These abodes are similar to Brahmapuri, but are one-fourth the size. We'll read Prabhupada's short purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that the township of Lord Brahma and the eight subordinate governors of the planetary systems, beginning with Indra, are mentioned in other Puranas. Then there's a quotation from another Purana. Brahma's township is known as Manovati, and those of his assistants, such as Indra and Agni, are known as Amaravati, Tejovati, Samyamani, Krishna, Krishnangana, Shradavati, Gandavati, Mahodaya, and Yasovati. Brahmapuri is situated in the middle, and the other eight Puris surround it in all directions. Thus, on the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Description of Jambudvipa. The next chapter is the descent of the river Ganga. Now there's a little part of a tape that I wanted to play. I hope it's queued up to the right place. May not be. Nothing's coming through? Is that the fault of the sound system or the...
Swami Prabhupada.
Oh, how about the other way though? I think it's the other way. There's nothing on the other side? Okay, we won't play a tape. Next time. Thank you. Any questions or comments? But if there's questions, please make them easy. Yes. I can explain it. Call tomorrow. I'll explain it. No, I can't explain it. I can just take what Prabhupada said as we should hear it and just hear it and think, oh, how wonderful. Amazing. Krishna is so amazing. How much still more amazing is the spiritual world?
Definitely gives you that impression, because even if someone was to make it up, it sounds really amazing and beyond the capacity to make it up. I mean, the capacity to make it up is material and given to you. But the personality who's given you the power to make it up even is beyond your power to make it up. So if you could go that far, even on the basis of your making up, it sounds so amazing to speak of. If one was to have a tape, that actually this has been described by authorities, and therefore it's something beyond what we can possibly conceive.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll read. I mentioned this last time, I think there's a section of Tomal Krishnamurti's diary, and they talk a little bit about this. And Prabhupada, part of his opinion was that because you have a prejudice, because we're trained in a particular way to see in a particular way, we can't see this type of it. We can't see what's actually there because of our conditioning, prejudiced conditioning. Did you have a question?
I just want to ask how often the weeks of this session?
We just finished the whole chapter. There's, let's see, till the end of the canto?
Just to the end of the
canto. Just bring a pillow. Now, that was more technical than others. In the summer of... Anyway, just listen. Mango rivers are not technical, they're tasty.
I just get desirous to enjoy those things.
There you go.
Cheese with honey.
Honey.
Five different directions.
Yeah.
Mango river.
Rivers, yeah, mango river.
Pure water machines. The heavenly women, the gold jewels and things. It's just.
Yeah, but if you want to enjoy them, you can. But you probably won't. It won't satisfy the deep longing in your heart. Well, there's philosophy. Next chapter is different things in the next chapter, and still different things in the next chapter. But there's definitely technical aspects of these chapters. There's 29 chapters, I believe, and I do have it written down how many weeks I've planned for this. 16. There's 1, 2, 3, about a month, a bit more than 4 weeks, between 4 and 5 weeks. Hopefully by the end of this Well, if Krishna allows, by the end of the actual calendar year, we'll be finished with the fifth canto.
In verse 3, Prabhupada's purport.
Yes.
So one should not give up anything connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking it material or enjoyable for the material senses. Even the senses when purified are spiritual. Can you explain it?
That what is necessary, there's 2 points in there. That what's necessary to give up is the enjoying spirit, not the activity. That's actually what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning of the 18th chapter and the questions that Arjuna asks in the 3rd and the 5th chapter. What actually is renunciation? What is sannyas? So what that question means is what is actually to be given up? So the Sanskrit terms are, is it karma faltyag? Giving up the fruit of one's work is what should be given up, not karma tyag, not giving up work itself. So work means working with the material world. That's not what's supposed to be given up. In fact, we can't give it up. Even if we say, I'm going to give it up, we can't. But how to deal with the material world in a neutral way, thinking of it as Krishna's, and serve Krishna through it with great devotion? That's the question. So one needs devotion to be able to do that. One needs an absence of false ego to be able to do that. One needs to be living in his actual identity as Krishna's servant. And what always gets in the way is that spirit of mastership, lordship, of Purusha. It's all meant for me. Someone has more than me, I'm envious of him. But it's not, actually it's not meant for either me or that other person. And there's no happiness to be gained thinking that it is, and attempting to gain lordship over it. So if one can actually understand that, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura said, one has taken the biggest step to going back to Godhead. In other words, at least he understands that I do not want to enjoy the material world. There's no hope. There's no hope. It's not possible. Why? Because we're incompatible with the material world. We're eternal. We're souls. We long for an eternal situation. We're compressed in matter. Limited. Conditioned. That's what condition means. Limited. And unconditioned means free. So if we can give up the spirit of enjoyment, then everything should be used for Krishna. After all, whose is it? Bina prakritamastadam, it is Krishna's, separated his material energy. So for that, what is necessary? To hear about Krishna from devotees. Fall in love with Krishna. And then detachment, when one practices bhakti, then detachment, satisfaction, tushti prushti chudapaya anugasan, and nourishment in Krishna consciousness all come at the same time. Any other questions or comments about this? About anything? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.